And so Jeroboam created a new religion for his kingdom. And from that time onward, all the way to the present, as we've been reading over and over again with the kings that followed, of course, we know what happened to Jeroboam. What he did led to his destruction and losing his kingdom, and did not help him to keep it at all. But every king of Israel, of the northern kingdom of those 10 tribes ever since, continued to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. We see that phrase over and over again through the other 18 kings that followed him, that will end with Hosea until God finally destroys that kingdom. And none of them ever depart from those sins. And we read that also about Jehu, the son of Nimshi, who has now become the king in the north, having been God's instrument to bring vengeance and destruction on the house of Ahab. And he totally wiped it out as God commanded him to do. But it told us after that, and after he removed Baal worship, the religion that Jezebel had brought into the kingdom, as he was removing all vestiges of the prior regime, his predecessors, as he's establishing himself as a new dynasty, Jehu was, but he did not depart from those sins of Jeroboam. We read that at the end of 2 Kings chapter 10. But Jehoshaphat was a righteous king in Judah, as was his father Asa. And those are the only two righteous kings that we've read about at all since the split of the kingdom. And they're going to be the only two righteous kings that we read about all until we get to Hezekiah, and then later Josiah. There's only two more. Very sad to see that record of rebellion and disobedience on the part of the Israelites throughout the period of the kings. But, of course, what did God warn them about? When they demanded to have a king like the nations, and they wanted to replace the system that God had set up for them through the judges, wherein God chose the judge and would choose the most righteous one in the land to be their leader. And they were always guaranteed to have a righteous leader by God's system. But with the kings, how has that worked? Well, they wanted to be like the nations around them, and what did they do? They were very much like the nations around them in every way, spiritually, in particular. So this is not a good time for Israel, with only these rare exceptions where we have four righteous kings, all of them in Judah, two of them together with Asa and Jehoshaphat. But then Jehoshaphat committed that very grave error in making a treaty and making peace with the northern kingdom, where they had been at war with each other almost continuously from the time of the split, when it was Jeroboam and Rehoboam, from that time all the way through Asa's time until Jehoshaphat. There had been conflict between the two kingdoms that was persistent. Well, Jehoshaphat made peace with his neighbor, with the northern kingdom. But what was the price of that peace? Well, the part that went along with the treaty, and this is not unusual when you have kingdoms ruled by kings, when they make peace between kingdoms that have been in conflict. What is the age old way for two kingdoms who've been fighting to make peace and come to an alliance? It's by making a marriage of the heirs, and that's what happened. And so Jehoshaphat's son Jehoram was married to Ahab's daughter Athaliah. They had peace between the two kingdoms, but what was the price of that peace? What did it cost? What did it cost Jehoshaphat as far as his family, and what did it cost his kingdom, his people, in terms of their spiritual situation in following the Lord, as they had been doing under Jehoshaphat and his father Asa? But when Jehoram married Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab, did he convert Athaliah to be a servant of Jehovah? No. And that's not the way it goes, is it? And that's not the way it went with them. So what ended up happening? Well, Athaliah very much converted Jehoram, who had been raised by a man that loved the Lord. Jehoram followed after the ways of the house of Ahab. And they had a son who became the next king of Judah. After Jehoram died, Athaliah was still living, but her son Ahaziah became king. He was the only remaining offspring of Jehoram. What happened to all of his other children? Remember, Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, he had married Athaliah, and as soon as he became king, what was the first act that he took? Killed all his brothers. The very first thing he did showed what kind of heart he had. He murdered all of his brothers, all potential rivals to the throne, as he would have perceived it. But then what happened to him? The Arabians came in, and these are things that are recorded in 2 Chronicles chapter 21, and there was a prophecy of it in verses 13 and 14, and then in verses 16 and 17 of 2 Chronicles 21, we read about the Arabians coming in and taking Jehoram's family, his children. And then chapter 22, verse 1, tells us how those Arabians, killed all of his children, and only the youngest, Ahaziah, remained. So the man that murdered all of his brothers lost all of his children except for the one. Now, would it have been just for if God had taken all of his children, including his heir, Ahaziah? Yes, but there's a particular reason God did not do that. And for whose sake did he preserve the one son who was the heir that became king? Yeah, it was for David's sake, because God promised to David, because of his righteousness, he was going to preserve a lamp for him always in Israel. And so he had promised to preserve his throne, and so he did, in spite of the wickedness of Jehoram. Well, then Ahaziah, as we read in the accounts of his life, before Jehu killed him too, along with his uncle Jehoram, and that happened together. So this is why the narrative converges with both these kingdoms, because Jehu killed the kings of both kingdoms at the same time. So they're both starting afresh with new kings. It's going to take a little bit. It's going to take 6 years for Judah to get a new actual king. But Jehu becomes he's the king of Israel now. But Ahaziah learned, was tutored, was schooled in all the ways of wickedness by his mother's family, by the house of Ahab and Jezebel. So they trained him in wickedness. It tells us that's what also happened. In 2 Chronicles 22 and verse 4, it says that Ahaziah did evil in the sight of the Lord like the house of Ahab, for they were his counselors after the death of his father to his destruction. He walked also after their counsel. And so they were the ones instructing him, teaching him. And it's astounding to read that. Here was a family that were with intent training this young man to be evil. That was the aim of the training, and to do these wicked things. Now, in their every way a man is right in his own eyes, as he tells us in Proverbs 21, verse 2, did Ahab and Jezebel and Athaliah and all these ones in that family, did they justify what they were doing? Did they have a way of rationalizing it in their minds to where what was actually evil in their minds was the right and wise way to go? Well, obviously so. But they had it all completely backwards. But Ahaziah was brought up with that. That's what he was trained in, and that's what he did. God had him destroyed, and that's one of the things it says about when Jehu killed him. Verse 7 of 2 Chronicles 22 says, "And the destruction of Ahaziah was of God." God had him singled out for that destruction. He had preserved him for David to have a light. So if he'd been killed in childhood, if he'd been killed before he was married and had offspring of his own, that would have been the end of David's dynasty through that succession, through the royal line. That would have been the end of it. But God did not allow that to happen, obviously for David's sake. And this is the genealogy that's recorded in the Gospel of Matthew at the very beginning of the New Testament, where it tells us how Jesus Christ was the son of Abraham, the son of David. I mean, it begins, the New Testament begins with that emphasis, that point. Here's who Jesus Christ is, and he is the son of Abraham. He is that one that God said he was going to bless all the nations of the earth through. That was the promise he'd made to Abraham. Well, Jesus Christ is that one. And he is also that one that God had prophesied all the way back to Jacob, that the scepter was not going to depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver between his feet until Shiloh come. Well, he's come. Here's Jesus Christ fulfilling all of that, and it established Christ's lineage as the rightful heir to David's throne. Well, how could Jesus have been the rightful heir to David's throne if there was not a direct line of succession from David all the way down to Jesus through the kings? See, God's preserving all of that. It's not only for David's sake, but part of that, of course, a big part of that is preparing the way for his son to come to be that heir of David's throne. So it's definitely connected to David, but it's much more than that. And that's why Jesus, of course, is reigning, sitting on David's throne to this very day, ruling over his spiritual kingdom, that is us, his church. But he's the rightful one to be on that throne. Well, if Ahaziah had been killed and there's no offspring there, and then that line ends right there, well, then there's a big problem, isn't it? So God was not going to let that happen. So it was of God to destroy Ahaziah, but he didn't do it until Ahaziah had children. But they're very young. But at his death, after his death by Jehu, what's the next thing that we read about here in 2 Chronicles chapter 22? So that sets things, that sets the table for where we're going from here in our study. So we left off the last time we were in 2 Chronicles, we were in chapter 22 and we finished verse 9 that tells us how the house of Ahaziah had no power to keep still the kingdom. He was killed by Jehu there in verse 9, and he was buried. It says, because he is the son of Jehoshaphat, who sought the Lord with all of his heart. So was it for Ahaziah's own sake that he received a royal burial? Even that was for the sake of his one who was his grandfather, who was righteous. So he got to live. He had a life that he really didn't deserve because God blessed and favored the righteous from before him, David and then Asa and Jehoshaphat. And then he received a burial he didn't deserve, really for the same reason. But he's dead and gone now. What happens next? Well, verse 10, and as we mentioned last week, this is... This certainly would qualify Athaliah to be, if she's not the worst grandmother ever, it would be hard to make a case for anybody being worse than she was. I mean, any of you that are here that are grandmothers, and we have quite a few, could not possibly relate to this, what she does to her own grandchildren. Verse 10 says, "But when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the seed royal of the house of Judah." And who would that be? I mean, those are her grandchildren. Ahaziah's heirs are her grandchildren. Well, she obviously cared for her son, but what about her grandchildren? She covets the power to be the ruler in Judah above the lives of her own grandchildren. So she... Like Jehoram murdered his brothers when he became king, She murders her own grandchildren so she can now become queen. That's what she does. I mean, who would do that? Who would covet power and want to rule a kingdom to the point where they would do that? I mean, it's bad enough to kill your own brothers, but killing your grandchildren? This is astounding. You might could even imagine a man that would kill his grandchildren, but here, this is a grandmother that does this so that she can establish herself to be queen. That's what she does, except there's one, just like with when Jehoram lost all of his children. Well, Jehoram, all of his children are killed and all of his grandchildren are killed by that wicked wife that he married, except one. One is preserved, just like Ahaziah was the one of Jehoram's children that was preserved. Jehoash is going to be preserved alive of Ahaziah's offspring. This is not to the knowledge of Athaliah. If she knew that that one of her grandchildren, obviously somehow she thought he was dead, but if she were to discover that in fact one of her grandchildren was still alive, well then that grandchild would be the heir to the throne that she was trying to occupy for herself. What would she have done to Joash if she had known about that he was still alive? Well, she thought he was dead because she wanted him dead. If she found out that he lived anyway, she would obviously have him killed. So in verse 11 it says, "But Jehoshabeth, the daughter of the king, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons that were slain, and put him and his nurse in a bedchamber. So Jehoshabeth, the daughter of King Jehoram, the wife of Jehoiada the priest, for she was the sister of Ahaziah, hid him from Athaliah so that she slew him not." Now this, we already had a glimpse of this in what we read from 2 Kings in the beginning of chapter 11, which we'll go to that, Lord willing, later, but we're looking at the account here in 2 Chronicles first. But verse 11 there tells us who this Jehoshaba or Jehoshabeth, we read both names are obviously different forms of the same name, she was Jehoram's daughter, so she's the sister of Ahaziah. Now, with the description of that, it does not identify her as being, when it says Jehoram's son, it doesn't say that she's also, or Jehoram's daughter, it doesn't say that she's Athaliah's daughter. Is it possible that she was? Yes, if she were Athaliah's daughter, then she would be the full sister of Ahaziah. But it certainly is an indication of the strong likelihood that she was a half sister of Ahaziah, was the son of Jehoram, but not the daughter of Athaliah. Would it have been unusual if Jehoram had had another wife other than Athaliah? Not by the custom of the time. That's what, as we've read about this. So it would not be any bit of a surprise whatsoever to find out that Jehoshabah or Jehoshabeth was, in fact, a half-sister of Ahaziah. She is the daughter of Jehoram. So at the very least, she is the half-sister of the king who was just killed by by Jehu, and she is the aunt of Joash, the one that she's saving. So she's saving her nephew here. She's saving the one remaining heir of her brother. Now, I'm not going to be able to say definitively that Jehoshabeth was not the daughter of Athaliah. We don't have an explicit statement like that in the scripture there, so I can't say what the scriptures don't say. But from the wording there, we can at least consider the possibility, if not the likelihood, that that Jehoshabeth was the son of the daughter of Jehoram, but not the daughter of Athaliah. That's very possible. It seems likely, but We cannot say that definitively, but we know that she was the daughter of Jehoram, that she was the sister of Ahaziah, whether she was the daughter of Athaliah as well or not. But this is her nephew, Joash, Ahaziah's son, and she hides him. So when she stole him from among the king's sons that were slain. So whatever the event was that was going on at the time when Athaliah had ordered the murder of her grandchildren, she managed to have him taken, but it wasn't in such a way that it was known to Athaliah, obviously. So whatever the events were and how that happened, when she stole him from among the king's sons that were slain. So did the ones who murdered the others, did they think he was dead? I mean, whoever was reporting back to Athaliah, and she would be requiring a report that they're all dead, and that was obviously the report that she got. But however it happened, Joash was not dead. And she got him out of there and put him and his nurse in a bed chamber. So he's an infant. So he's not yet weaned, and so they're hidden in a room. But who else is Jehoshabeath, in addition to being the son of Jehoram? I mean, the daughter of Jehoram. She's the wife of Jehoiada, who is the high priest. Now, this is another reason why we have to consider the possibility, what I would say the very strong likelihood, that Jehoshabeath was not the daughter of Athaliah. If she were the daughter of Athaliah, I mean, what would she have been? Would she have been married to the high priest? That's very difficult to envision, that she would have married the high priest of Israel if she were fully of the house of Ahab like Ahaziah was. Because that when they trained him in those ways, would they not also have trained his sister? But if she's not the daughter of Athaliah, if Jehoram married somebody else in addition to Athaliah, at least that gives the chance that she married somebody who still was a follower of Jehovah. However it happened, though, Jehoshabeath is righteous. She loves the Lord, and she's married to a man who's a high priest who is a righteous man. So even though all of this wickedness is going on, is there still any righteousness left in Jehoshaphat's family? Yes. Now, as far as the line that becomes the royal line, he wrecked that by having Jehoram marry Athaliah. But at least through Jehoshabeath, that right now there's still some righteousness in Jehoshaphat's descendants. And she's married to a very righteous man who's the high priest. So it shows that there are still some good ones left in Israel and in Judah particularly, and in Jerusalem at this time. And they're hiding the king. And they're going to be the ones to bring him up. And now here's what's going to be very, very sad. Obviously, the high priest is righteous, and we're going to read more about his goodness. But here is the high priest, who is a righteous man, and his son is going to be a prophet. But the high priest is going to be raising up Joash along with his aunt, who's going to serve like their parent. He's an infant. They're raising him from his infancy. So he's away from all of the influence of Athaliah and brought up to know and to love the Lord. And then when he becomes king, at least until the high priest dies, he's going to follow the ways that he was instructed in, the Lord's ways. But is he converted to the Lord in spite of this upbringing? Sadly, we're going to read that as soon as Jehoiada, the high priest, the ones who bring him up as their own, as soon as they're gone, and then he's going to go off on his own into wickedness. And then the son of Jehoiada, and we can think about this. This would mean that's the cousin of Joash, but they're brought up as brothers, aren't they? I mean, if he's not raised by, I mean, his father, Ahaziah, is dead. His mother, Athaliah, is the one that was trying to kill him. His aunt and uncle are the ones that saved him and brought him up. Well, it was their son, the Zechariah we're going to read about, is going to be the one the Lord is going to use to rebuke Joash when he departs from the Lord after Jehoiada's dead. What's he going to do with his cousin, who's really like his brother that he's brought up with? He's going to have him killed for rebuking him as the Lord's prophet. So it's going to be a very sad tale that we read about, and of course not in the sense of a fable type of tale. The account, the story of Joash is obviously God's word, and as every word from God, it happened. But to read about it is very sad. To see someone who was really saved from all those wicked influences and given every opportunity to know God and to serve God and to forsake the Lord anyway. It's a very cautionary example for sure. But that's getting a little bit ahead of ourselves where we are right now. But that's a preview, and that's what's going on. But at least at this point, we get to see the description of Jehoshabeth and that she's the wife of Jehoiada, and that they save Joash from his own grandmother and hid him from Athaliah so that she slew him not. So he's not killed. She doesn't know. Athaliah does not know that he's alive. In verse 12 says, "And he was with them hid in the house of God 6 years. And Athaliah reigned over the land." So she wiped out her own grandchildren, all the ones that would have been, potentially would have been anointed as the next king, since Ahaziah was dead. If he has any remaining sons, they're going to be king. And then she doesn't get to be queen. That's why that was her motivation. So she kills all her grandchildren so that she can be queen. And how long does she get to be queen? 6 years. Now she's obviously thinking it's going to be longer than that. But to think about this, all of the evil that she does to have 6 years to be able to reign as queen over Judah. Is she the ruler of Judah in God's sight? No. She is, this is a usurpation of authority. I mean, she's usurped the throne. She is not a rightful occupant of the throne. Now, is God allowing this 6 years to happen? Yes, he has his reasons, but Athaliah is going to end up being killed at the end of those 6 years. And Joash is going to be brought out. He's going to be made king. She's going to be killed. And then the succession is going to be restored through the line of David, as we'll see from Ahaziah, then to Joash and to his descendants. But there's not going to be another righteous king in Judah until Hezekiah. Now, we will see some. We've already seen with Solomon's son Jeroboam. Did he ever do anything good? Well, yeah, what did we read there with the first king of Judah after the split, after Solomon's death? He walked in the ways of Solomon and the ways of David for how long? 3 years. Then he went astray, and he didn't come back because he prepared not his heart to seek the Lord, is what we're told. That was his problem. Now, we were told how Jehoshaphat walked in the ways of the Lord all of his days. And in contrast, it says, because he did prepare his heart to seek the Lord. So that was a big key. Rehoboam didn't do that. Jehoshaphat did. Obviously, Asa also did. But we will have some of these that serve the Lord for a while. Rehoboam did for 3 years, but then he departed from the Lord. The good influence was gone. So when Solomon repented of his wickedness, did he make an effort to have his son to fear God and keep his commandments, to do what is the whole conclusion of the matter and what the whole of man is? He obviously did. And it left, after Solomon's death, those efforts bore fruit for 3 years. But then after that guidance is gone, what happened? Well, of course, who did he marry? He was married. Well, he was the mother of Jehoram was an Ammonitess. So Solomon's gone. What kind of influence does he have then? Well, the good is gone. But it kept him, the results of that kept him on the right path. It lasted 3 years, but then that's it. And as we know, his son Abijam, even though he, with his mouth, gave allegiance to Jehovah, he didn't serve him any of his days. But then it was his son Asa who did, and Jehoshaphat did, but now with what happened with that marriage of Jehoram to Athaliah, Jehoram didn't follow the Lord. His son Ahaziah didn't follow the Lord. Jehu is going to, until for the lifetime, the duration of the life of Jehoiada, the high priest, and then he's going to depart from the Lord. So does he count as being a righteous king because he did what he was guided to do by the ones who raised him and this righteous high priest, but as soon as he's gone, then he departs from the Lord? What does that say about Joash? Was he ever really converted, or was he doing what he was told to do because that's what he had to do? But what happened when he became his own man and he had nobody to say, okay, you need to do this, you need to do that, when he was unshackled, and it should not have been the way he would have viewed it, but I mean, clearly he did, but when he was removed then from the influences and the guidance of his uncle, the high priest, what does he do? Well, he goes fully after evil. And we're going to read a couple of generations after him where they followed the Lord for a bit, but then departed. So they're not righteous. They're very weak, and they don't serve the Lord all their days. They give some service to him, but then they go away from him. So there's not going to be any strong influence for good and for righteousness in Judah until we get to Hezekiah. So there's this is a very long period of spiritual decline in Judah that we're now in. And certainly during these 6 years when Athaliah is reigning, this would have been a very horrible time to have been. Can you imagine having to have been in Judah for those 6 years when she was on the throne? This would have been a very bad time in that nation, that kingdom. But that's what happened. But where is Joash during this time? The one place that you could be certain that Athaliah would not have any of her people to be in, he's hidden in a room in the temple. Well, that's the high priest, of course, he had access to the temple. I mean, that's where his job was. And so he was hidden in a bed chamber there in the temple complex. So that's where he was kept safe, where his aunt and uncle could keep a very close, watchful eye over him, and he was protected. And nobody knew he was there, other than obviously the Jehoshabeth and Jehoiada, and then his nurse. But there were only a select few that knew of his existence, and they were obviously faithful, and they protected him, and the knowledge of his existence was unknown to any others, and in particular to Athaliah. So what happened after that? Well, after that, there's going to be, Joash is going to be brought out from his seclusion, and he's going to be anointed king of Judah. So that's where we begin in 2 Chronicles chapter 23. And this is going to parallel 2 Kings 11 that we'll also tie in here after a bit. But as we begin 2 Chronicles 23, in verse 1, it says, in the seventh year, so he'd been hid for 6 years, so now we're beginning year 7, it says, Jehoiada strengthened himself and took the captains of hundreds, Azariah the son of Jehoram, and Ishmael the son of Jehohanan, And Azariah the son of Obad, and Maaseiah the son of Adaiah, and Elishaphat the son of Zichri, into covenant with him. So how did he strengthen himself here? Well, he gets the ones who, if he's going to have Jehu to be anointed king, I mean, there's going to be an open conflict now with Athaliah, who's made herself queen for these 6 years. This is going to end in someone's death. Either if he succeeds in having Joash to become king over Judah, to restore the throne to David's heirs, then Athaliah is going to end up being killed. She's not going to remain alive and put up with this. So this is going to be a death struggle. Either Athaliah is going to die, or if Athaliah succeeds, she would kill her remaining grandson, Joash, and then what would happen to the high priest? What would happen to Jehoiada and any who helped him? I mean, they would all be killed. So who is going to come into play as being very key in determining how the outcome of this? What does it always come down to? The army. Whose side are the soldiers going to be on? Because if the army backs Athaliah, what's Jehoiada going to be able to do other than die? And Joash with him. But if the army backs Joash, who is the rightful heir to the throne, then who's isolated and on her own with no help? That will be Athaliah. So that's going to determine this. And so he strengthens himself. He's going to the leaders of the army of Judah here, these captains that it names right there. So he's getting the military leaders that have the sway over the army. He's appealing to them to have the allegiance of the army to back the one who is the rightful heir. Does he have a strong argument here? He has the strongest of arguments. I mean, here Joash is alive. Ahaziah, the king that was killed by Jehu, has a son, a rightful heir to his throne, that is alive. This one that's on the throne who's usurped it, and clearly she's usurped it. She's murdered her grandchildren so she could be queen, but there is a rightful heir, and she's not it. So that's would be a very persuasive argument for them. And they're persuaded. So in verse 2 it says, "And they went about in Judah and gathered the Levites out of all the cities of Judah and the chief of the fathers of Israel, and they came to Jerusalem." All right, so he starts with the leaders of the army, because if he doesn't have them on his side, if Jehoiada doesn't have them with him, then nothing else is going to matter. So that's where he goes first to strengthen himself. But who do they get next? Now they're getting, he's the high priest, so he's getting all the Levites. So you're going to have the backing now of the army and the priesthood and all the Levites and the chief of the fathers of Israel. So you're going to have all of the leaders of all the families of the ones in Judah. So if you've got all of the prominent family leaders with all the priests and the Levites and the army, this was a very skillful way to have the nation to back Joash being made to be the next king of Judah. Because with all of that on Jehoiada's side, how isolated is Athaliah? Who she got? I mean, she might have a few of her personal guard, but she's not going to have anybody in comparison to this. So this was done in a very wise way by the high priest. But the fact that he is the high priest and is recognized as such, I mean, he's already starting from a position of strength. Plus, he's the one that has the heir to the throne under his care. With that, the rest of it falls into place. Obviously, God is the one that is blessing this, because if it had been God's will for this to go a different way, well, first of all, then Athaliah would have succeeded in having him killed in the first place. I mean, whose will was it that Joash be saved? I mean, that was obviously of God. And it's of God here that he's blessing Jehoiada, this righteous high priest, in his efforts to have what is right to be done in Judah, and to have this wicked woman, who's a usurper, to be removed, not just as queen, but to be removed from the earth. So in verse 3 it says, "And all the congregation made a covenant with the king in the house of God. And he said unto them, Behold, the king's son shall reign, as the Lord hath said of the sons of David." So there's the real strength there. God said that, and this is the tribe of Judah now, remember that. I mean, who was the first king from their tribe? David. I mean, does David's name still have any strength in the land of Judah? I mean, he's the greatest of their tribesmen, and he was their king. And that name still reverberates. And in spite of the wickedness that many of them have fallen into, is there still a, well, even today, and Brother Jan can tell you, I mean, there's a big, the big famous hotel in Jerusalem to this very day. What's it called? The King David Hotel. I mean, even to those to this very day who are Jews and who profess their allegiance to so-called Israel. Of course, the Israel that has that name today is not the biblical Israel. But in spite of that, just for the point, though, I mean, does David's name mean anything to Jews even now? Yes. Now, do they know him and know why he was really important? And do they have any understanding of that? Zero. But of course, God used him in such a way, and he was such a mighty king. There, all of that, they're looking at the physical power that was theirs during his time. And that was still around in Christ's time. And when they were looking for a Messiah who was going to establish an earthly kingdom, what were they really looking for? They wanted to see a repeat of what was under David and Solomon. Of course, that was not God's plan at all. But at any rate, David's name is still great in Judah. And everybody knows what God said. I mean, everybody knows that God had established his throne and said that his throne would be preserved. This would have been known far and wide among all the people. That's still known among them at this time. And that's the real argument that Jehoiada is using here. Behold, look at him. The king's son will reign. This is the king's son, David's heir. Here he is. And here's what God said should be done. I mean, so you have all of that argument there. And I mean, what could be argued contrary to that? And so as the Lord has said of the sons of David, but we can see the righteousness of Jehoiada, the real emphasis he's giving there, why this should be done, is it's by whose word? It's by the word of God, what God said. We need to do what God says. And so that's that, and that's what he did in his life, and that shows by the upbringing that he gave to Joash. Verse 4 says, "This is the thing that you shall do: a third part of you entering on the Sabbath of the priests and of the Levites shall be porters of the doors, and a third part shall be at the king's house, and a third part at the gate of the foundation, and all the people shall be in the courts of the house of the Lord. But let none come into the house of the Lord save the priests and they that minister of the Levites. They shall go in, for they are holy, but all the people shall keep the watch of the Lord. And the Levites shall compass the king round about, every man with his weapons in his hand, and whosoever else cometh into the house, he shall be put to death. But be ye with the king when he cometh in and when he goeth out." So he's setting it up here for, he's having everybody, I mean, if they're going to be at the gates of the city, of where the walls of Jerusalem are, if that's going to be under guard, and the temple where Joash is, and the king's palace, Well, how is there going to be able to rally any opposition to this? All of that is being cut off. So now this is no longer a tightly held secret. Look at how many now have been told about Joash's existence. But how much support does this have to where this hasn't leaked out and gotten back to Athaliah yet? I mean, this is being done, obviously, in a very urgent manner. But the Lord is protecting this. The Lord is not allowing... He's got control over who's knowing here and that they're faithful to it, that he's preventing Athaliah from preventing this from happening. So in verse 8 it says, "So the Levites and all Judah did according to all things that Jehoiada the priest had commanded, and took every man his men that were to come in on the Sabbath with them that were to go out on the Sabbath, for Jehoiada the priest dismissed not the courses." Well, there's usually a changeover. But with them not being dismissed, you're going to have everybody. You know, when one shift is leaving and the other shift comes in, well, he's going to have both shifts or courses together. So they're strengthened in their numbers here. And verse 9 says, "Moreover, Jehoiada the priest delivered to the captains of hundreds spears and bucklers and shields that had been King David's, which were in the house of God." Well, there's the... Has Jehoiada been preparing for this for some time? Obviously, and he's got all of these, there's all this weaponry that it says had been King David's that were still there at the temple. And now he's handing all this out. Here he's giving to all these ones, to these captains, the leaders of the military that he had first called. And he's given to them spears, bucklers, shields. Here's one of David's spears for you now. Here's this shield of David for you, for this. I mean, these leaders are given the very instruments that had been King David's. What's that going to do? When he's already gotten them on his side, but then he's handing out these to the leaders of the military, the very instruments of David himself. Is that going to secure their commitment to this? I mean, that would have had tremendous meaning to the soldiers there, that these are the very instruments, tools and weapons, that were David's himself. So in verse 10, it says, "And he set all the people, every man having his weapon in his hand, from the right side of the temple to the left side of the temple, along by the altar, and the temple by the king round about." So he's well protected. Verse 11, "Then they brought out the king's son and put upon him the crown and gave him the testimony and made him king. And Jehoiada and his sons anointed him and said..." Now notice it says, "and his sons." Here are Jehoiada's sons, and would his son, who was one that became a prophet of the Lord, been among them? There's no reason to doubt that they did. So think about that. I mean, here, his son would have been that was helping Joash to become king in the first place, being right there from the beginning of all this, and then he's going to end up being killed by this boy once he grows up and turns wicked. Just because he tells him that that's what he was doing, that he was being wicked and he needed to repent. It's astonishing. But that's what happened here. But at any rate, in verse 12, that it tells us that... now, when in verse 11... So they brought out the king's son and put upon him the crown and gave him the testimony, made him king, and Jehoiada and his sons anointed him and said, "God save the king." Now when Athaliah heard the noise of the people running and praising the king, she came to the people into the house of the Lord. And she looked, and behold, the king stood at the pillar at the entering in, and the princes and all the trumpets by the king, and all the people of the land rejoiced and sounded with trumpets, also the singers and instruments of music and such as taught to sing praise. Then Athaliah rent her clothes and said, "Treason, treason." could she even utter those words? So it's treason for her grandson that she had tried to murder and failed to. It's treason for him, the son of her son who had been the king. That's treason for him to become king, the son of the king that was dead, when she was the one that tried to kill him and killed all the others so she could be queen. And they were the ones guilty of treason by making him king. I mean, who was the one guilty of treason? I mean, she was accusing them of doing exactly what she had done. She had committed treason to make herself queen, and her treason failed, and it was not treason to undo her treason. She knows what's up now. But I mean, it's really astonishing that it got to this point, and now it's happened, and her first knowledge of it is when the event has already occurred. So she finds out at a moment when it's already too late. So she's not going to be able to do anything thwart this, and she's going to end up losing her life as a result of all of that. But Lord willing, we'll continue that next week, next Lord's Day. We close now and going again to our Heavenly Father in prayer.